Listeners in Central and Western Africa can tune in at 2130 hours UTC on 9410 kHz.
Radio Prague News.
The Czech Republic has dropped further down the ranking of clean countries drawn up by anti-corruption watchdog Transparency International. The government has offered to leave public sector pay scales unchanged, but is sticking to its demand for state wage costs to be decimated. And the first family of Cuban dissidents released from prison has arrived in Prague. The Czech Republic's corruption ranking has worsened this year, according to the annual evaluation carried out by the anti-graft watchdog Transparency International. The country fell from 52nd to 53rd place in the ranking of 178 countries this year. In 2008, the Czech Republic was 45th. Transparency International's Czech branch director said no anti-corruption measures were taken over the last 18 months, with the country gripped by permanent election campaign. Politicians like to talk about measures but had so far not taken any action, he added. Among the least corrupt countries were Denmark, New Zealand and Singapore. Prime Minister Petr Nečas met with national and public sector union chiefs on Tuesday morning over their threat to strike over government plans to cut wages and shake up wage scales. The Prime Minister offered to leave current wage scales alone, but pledged to go ahead with the government's plans to cut 10% off the state wages bill next year, either through job losses or pay cuts. He added that the budget for state employees would not be touched from 2012 to 2014. Union leaders said they would discuss the latest offer on Friday, but some said after the meeting that the government's latest position changed little. Unions have already given notice of their intention to strike and must now decide on whether to lift their threat. The first of 10 exiled Cuban families, whom the Czech Republic has agreed to grant a political asylum, landed at Prague Airport on Tuesday. Dissident Ronaldo Jiménez Posada and his family were welcomed by Interior Minister Radek Jón and representatives of the charity People in Need. The Czech Republic and Spain are currently the only European countries that have agreed to take on the families, according to the ministry. Mr. Posada was one of 53 dissidents released by the Cuban government this year. He said in Prague that the gesture was meaningless since he had been punished for nothing apart from fighting for his rights. And finally, look at the weather. It will be cloudy with sunny intervals over the next days, with daytime temperatures rising to 10 degrees Celsius on the state holiday on Thursday, but will be below freezing at night. I'm Chris Johnston, and that was the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I am Ruth Franíková. Coming up in today's program, will the winners of the municipal elections in Prague, Topo 9, be left out in the cold? After 11 years, the last Czech contingent has returned home from its KFOR mission in Kosovo. And two NGOs have launched a project aimed at raising awareness of cyberbullying in Czech schools. Later on in the program, we examine the success of citizen groups in redrawing the Czech municipal map.
These, anti-candidates whose program was to eliminate the ruling mafias won the elections.
All that coming up, so please stay with us. Following the recent municipal elections, it appeared that the winners in the capital, Topo 9, with its candidate for mayor Zdeněk Tuma, would head City Hall. But a little over a week later, that possibility seems fairly remote. Following negotiations, the other main parties, the Civic Democrats together with the Social Democrats, appear ready to bypass the winner entirely, allowing things to remain business as usual. A little earlier, Jan Wellinger spoke to Prague-based American journalist Eric Best.
I think this was more or less to be expected from the very beginning. I think there was a concerted effort to give the impression that there would be changes at Prague City Hall, both on the part of the Civic Democrats and the Social Democrats. And that was, in fact, promoted as well somewhat by the media. But I think all along they probably planned on forming what we call a grand coalition. That means the Civic Democrats and the Social Democrats. And that has actually been in place for a number of years. So in that respect, it's nothing really new. What is new, that there was a new party, Top 09, that promised or thought that it could end this arrangement, and voters supported it massively with more than 30% of the vote. And now we are finding out that this is probably not going to come to pass, and that voters are, in a sense, being tricked into remaining where they were prior to these elections.
How do you think that voters could react if indeed it comes down to this coalition? Do you think that it will be a very unsatisfying result for them?
Well, I think the two parties are dragging it out a bit. So whenever you're doing something unpopular, it's better to do it over a bit of a time period. And because of that, they will somewhat diminish the backlash by voters. But I think undoubtedly the voters are going to feel cheated. But you have to recall that the next elections are a number of years away, and many, many things can happen between now and then. I suspect that the ruling parties will think they have enough time to work it out.
What are concretely some of the advantages for the Civic Democrats and the Social Democrats if they agree on this coalition? As you mentioned, it is an arrangement that has sort of worked for some time.
You first of all have very concrete business relationships that are in place with specific politicians in the two parties that have basically been running the city for a number of years. Those relationships are developers. They are operators of city-owned facilities. They are various service providers. It's partly linked to the utility companies because of the seats on the boards of some of these companies. And you have very specific relationships that they want to maintain. And if you bring in a new party, it means disrupting some of those relationships and bringing in people who have not been part of that system so far. And I think that's one of the main reasons we are unlikely to see TALP as the ruling party, because of all the business relationships involved.
Top 09 were quite effective in their campaign. Do you think that they will make a strong opposition party at Prague City Hall?
I don't think so. I think they will be a weak opposition party because their voice will be very, very small, and it will depend more and more on the eloquence of their leaders. And their leaders in Prague are not eloquent at all. So there is not a great desire on the part of journalists to speak to an opposition leader who isn't really able to stir up the masses and bring attention to the causes. I'm afraid that if it works out that there's a grand coalition of the other two parties, that TALP will kind of shrivel up in Prague, and that's going to have a big impact as well on its performance on the national level.
Erik Best talking to my colleague Jan Wellinger. The main force of the Czech army serving in the NATO operation in Kosovo has returned home to the Czech Republic, ending a peacekeeping mission of 11 years. Only a small group of soldiers now remains there to maintain the isolated Czech base at Šajkovac in the northeast of the country until the very last troops leave at the end of next year. The withdrawal also meant the end of an 8-month tour of duty for the 16th contingent of the Czech army. Earlier today, Christian Felvy spoke with the contingent's press spokeswoman, Captain Magdalena Dvořáková.
Do you feel like the Czech force was doing an important job in practical terms in Kosovo, or was it more a case of simply maintaining a presence?
I believe it was both. The 16th contingent was fulfilling operational tasks as all the other contingents since 1999, but also there were new tasks that we had to do because we were the last contingent, like handing over the security of Gazimestan Monument, which is one of the most important historical sites in Kosovo. Also, we participated in monitoring the security situation in Kosovo Mitrovice as a part of the tactical reserve of KFOR commander.
And that situation was calm for the most part?
Yes, right now the situation in Kosovo is long-term stable and calm. Probably the only location where we still are expecting some problems are in Kosovo Mitrovice, which is the north of Kosovo.
And the defense minister says that Czech forces could return within 14 days. Under what circumstances would that happen?
I don't know. I don't know that exactly. That would be a decision of the KFOR commander, and I believe that would happen if the security situation worsened and would need, besides the Kosovo police, need a support from Czech soldiers.
There's still a reserve battalion of 92 soldiers there, so you're not really the last soldiers out. What are those soldiers going to be doing until they are withdrawn?
Well, these soldiers, they're combat soldiers, but their main task would be there to secure the base and also provide taking care of the facility. So they will be coming home in July next year.
Captain Magdalena Dvořáková speaking there to my colleague Christian Felvey. Still ahead, there is our weekly talking point, but first we turn to cyberbullying, which has become a serious problem in Czech schools and one that teachers are often poorly equipped to deal with. Two NGOs, ISIS and Nadace O2, have launched a project aimed at raising awareness of the problem and fighting it. Daniela Lazarová has the story.
Although half of Czech school children do not know what the term cyberbullying means, one in ten have experienced it in person, most frequently in the form of harassment and ridicule via SMS messages, emails and on Facebook. The head of the Stop Cyberbullying project, Jana Udatná, says that unlike physical attacks, mental harassment is harder for teachers to detect and can do immense damage.
Most of it is in the form of SMS messages because everyone in school has a mobile. It can take place right under the teacher's nose without their having any suspicion. Increasingly, though, cyberbullying takes place on the web, with kids being filmed on mobile phones and placed on YouTube. There, their humiliation is seen by a vast number of people, and that is most frustrating of all for the victims.
Anonymous polls show that very few victims ask for help or even realize what is happening to them. Experts blame this on the fact that while the young generation is heavily dependent on mobile phones and the internet for communication, kids get very little or no information about the dangers it presents, how they may put themselves at risk or violate the rights of others. Dozens of small bullies blackmail their victims, demanding money in return for not putting a sensitive picture or information on the web. Older kids, who are light years ahead of their teachers in using the internet, set up Facebook pages in their classmates' name or even target the teacher in this manner, using stuff recorded in the classroom. The Stop Cyberbullying project has set out to educate both students and teachers in how to recognize and deal with a problem, but more importantly, how to prevent it. The first phase is to get kids to open up about their experience in a creative way. Younger children play games, perform plays, and create their own cartoons on the subject, revealing much more than they would talking to a teacher or psychologist. Higher grades debate the issue from a human rights angle, and the 100 schools involved in the project are taking part in a competition for the best film clip on the subject. The motivation for older kids is that they get to meet IT specialists and people from the advertisement business who will feed them know-how. The winning team will then be asked to produce its own campaign against cyberbullying.
Many thanks to Daniela Lazarová. Just a reminder that you are listening to the International Service of Czech Radio, broadcasting from Prague. One of the most startling features of recent elections in big cities, towns and local councils across the Czech Republic was the success of independent citizens groups in winning seats. Many campaigned on a simple ticket of throwing the incumbent big parties or coalitions, often tarnished with mismanagement or corruption, out of power. So do those elections mark a radical change or just a blip? And is there any reason to hope that the blight of local government corruption can be conquered? In this week's Talking Point, Chris Johnston looks at the phenomenon and chances of a Czech anti-corruption drive.
Across the Czech Republic, from Liberec in the north to České Budějovice in the south, Karlovy Vary in the west to Zlín in the east, there were strong showings in mid-October elections for citizens' groups taking a stand against parties that have been in power for a long time and been linked to corrupt or dubious dealings. It was not just the big cities either. The same trend could be seen in smaller towns. One of those smaller towns was Černošice, around 15 kilometres southwest of Prague, which had been dominated by the right-of-centre Civic Democrats, or ODS. The local elections have transformed the political map there, with a local citizens group, Černošice Affairs, winning 12 of the 21 council seats, and the long-established parties faring badly. Filip Korinek is the citizens group candidate to be the next mayor. He says the vote clearly represented a backlash against the established political parties.
I think this whole election shows a trend whereby people have realized that there's no need to have politicians in their city councils. And actually, people now want their city councils to be run by people from amongst them, active citizens. And especially in smaller cities where people know each other much more, I think this is possible. So when I looked at the results of the elections in places around ours, I could see a very similar picture everywhere. Wherever there was a independent group of citizens not related to any bigger political party, typically this was the winner.
While Mr. Korinek does not directly accuse the previous council of corruption, he says there were some pretty dubious land deals prepared, and the previous regime showed a basic contempt for fundamental principles of democracy.
The council was actually dominated by the Civic Democratic Party, ODS, which has shown a lot of the different things that you would probably not want to see in your own city council. Abuse of the zoning plan, conflicts of interest, refusal to provide information, threats, and an overall atmosphere of, say, arrogance and low willingness to run the office as a service to the citizens.
Tomáš Kramar is head of the anti-corruption program of the non-for-profit organization Oživení, or Renewal, which has campaigned against local government graft. He says the local election results this time round produced a surprisingly succinct message that voters will not tolerate town hall corruption.
Compared to the last elections 4 years ago, when we were very disappointed, now we were very positively surprised that in quite a lot of cities, these, let's say, anti-candidates whose program was to eliminate the ruling mafias won the elections. It was very unexpected.
He says that the problem of corruption grew over the last years at a local council level, though, of course, there are no real figures how big it is. This is because many parties or coalitions were in power for so long and nurtured close links with business.
I would not use the word mafias, but, you know, these networks and connections between local politicians and local business groups. And in a lot of cities, one group of politicians was ruling, let's say, for 10, 15 years, and these connections became very, very obvious and very strong. And when the cities, for example, sold some properties or they gave public contracts, a lot of money was flowing into special business groups. Everybody knew it and everybody knows it. And everybody knows as well that there is no way to stop it from the outside.
Nationwide, it's estimated that around 15% of the value of public contracts is accounted for by bribes or payoffs. Contracts from local councils represent around half of all national tenders, with the budget of some city halls, such as Prague, bigger than some national ministries. So the sums being talked about amount to hundreds of billions of crowns or tens of billions of dollars. While Mr. Kramer is optimistic that the local election results will result in a clean out at some councils, he warns that the apparent victory of the citizens' groups in some places could be pyrrhic, and that they could soon be sidelined. Negotiations over the makeup of many councils are still going on, days after the results were declared.
From some cities we have information that these, let's say, anti-corruption activists who got into the local parliaments will be pushed out, pushed away from the local governments because the local politicians are afraid what they could do, you know, taking out on light some contracts and trying to break them. But there are still quite enough towns and cities where these newly elected activists will be governing.
Citizens' groups have taken power in Liberec and Zlin and are poised to elsewhere. But the picture is far from clear in Prague, where it was not a citizens' group but a new party with some old faces, Topo 9, which won victory in the capital. In Prague, Topo 9's campaign was headed by the former governor of the Czech National Bank, Zdeněk Tuma, who has built a solid reputation for competence and not been tarnished by corruption. The Civic Democrats had been badly splattered by a series of corruption scandals, with former President Václav Havel dubbing it the worst administration in recent memory. But with haggling over who will govern Prague still continuing, anti-corruption campaigner Tomáš Kramer has doubts whether Topo 9's victory will really result in a sea change in the capital. Meanwhile, in Černošice, the victorious citizens group says it was prepared to govern with all the other parties apart from the Civic Democrats, although it could do so alone. And Filip Korinek promises a fundamental change in the way things are done.
So we have very specific ideas of what we want to change. We have had difficulties getting information. We had difficulties putting good ideas through because they were rejected just because of the person who was submitting them. This is not going to be the case.
Oživený's Tomáš Kramer says cleaning up the situation at local government level in the Czech Republic demands some basic changes in the law. He says the main problems are the many loopholes in the legal situation, and in particular the weakness of the state to probe mismanagement and corruption and take remedial action. Here he contrasts the situation of the Czech spending watchdog, the National Audit Office, which has no oversight of local government activities, with that of counterparts in neighbouring countries.
The power of the National Auditing Office compared to Slovakia, Poland, Germany is very weak or is, let's say, zero over the local communal level. And the main problem is the lack of law enforcement at the local level. When you put together the fact that the auditing office has no right to oversee, that the media are not as much interested in local things compared to national, and that local citizens have no right to sue contracts, to get them to court when they are signed in an illegal way. That makes together a situation where you cannot punish mayors or local politicians when they do waste management of the city property.
In Germany, for example, he says the watchdog demands reports of steps taken to address its criticisms. Here, the reports are just pieces of paper. To sum it up, he says local politicians are virtually untouchables as regards prosecution. In Slovakia, the corruption fight has gone much further, and a new law has also taken effect which aims at allowing ordinary citizens to bring their local masters to book.
They have, since last year, a new municipal law where they put to citizens the right to bring the local contracts to court if they think they are signed in an illegal way that is harming the city's interest. We prepared an amendment to the Czech municipal law, and this is now being discussed at the Ministry of Interior.
He hopes that the good results from the local elections will help this amendment, since many anti-corruption activists are backing it. But the newly ousted and admonished political parties might believe the elections were just a blip on the political map, and all they'd have to do is to wait until better times.
That edition of Talking Point by Chris Johnston brings us to the end of today's programme. Please tell us if you've got any thoughts on what you've heard on the show today. The postal address is Vinohradská 12, 120-99, Prague 2. The address for emails is english@radio.cz. We'll talk to you soon, but until then, from me, Ruth Franíková, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening and goodbye.
В эфире Радио Прага и навещание чешского радио. В связи с переходом на летнее время передачи русской редакции Радио Прага выходят в эфир по новому расписанию. Внимание! Передачи выходят в эфир по универсальному времени. Московское летнее время соответствует универсальному времени плюс 4 часа. В Минске и Киеве универсальное время плюс 3 часа. В 4 часа утра русская редакция «Радио Прага» выходит в эфир на частоте 9445 кГц. В 11 часов 30 минут по универсальному времени вы можете нас услышать на частоте 9880 кГц. С 14 часов 30 минут русская редакция «Радио Прага» выходит в эфир на частоте 11720 кГц. Уважаемые радиослушатели, обратите свое внимание, что ныне русская редакция «Радио Прага» выходит в эфир также и в 17 часов 30 минут на частоте 7205 кГц. Напоминаем, что все программы русской редакции «Радио Прага» на коротких волнах выходят в эфир по универсальному времени. Разница с московским летним временем составляет плюс 4 часа.